Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
Big Warriors preview and a big show for a big game. Joining me is Danny LaRue of Dunked On Podcast and Locked On Warriors to talk about the Warriors and the Grizzlies tonight at FedEx Forum. We'll do all of that next. You are Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody. Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. As I mentioned, a big show coming up for you. Danny LaRue will join me in a few moments to talk about Grizzlies and Warriors tonight at FedEx Forum. Game 3 between the two in the regular season. The Grizzlies have that 2-0 lead, including the remarkable comeback in the fourth quarter of that game in the Bay Area that was crazy, was absolutely bonkers. Still one of the most remarkable comebacks I can ever remember. And we'll see if that has any impact on tonight's game. Also tonight, interestingly enough, before we hear from Danny, I want to mention a couple of things. First of all, check out. It will be up, I would say, early in the morning. So when you are listening to this, it may already be up, but if not, it'll be up soon enough, and I'll throw a link up on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. I've got a piece coming out on Mike Conley and his performance this year and why I think his injury cost him an all-star appearance. With some interesting numbers, by the way, I think you're not going to see anywhere else, and I think you'll be very intrigued by it. So if you like this podcast, you will want to check that out. Please do. That's coming up later on this morning at the Commercial Appeal, and I'll make sure to get you the link in a number of different ways. Second thing I want to talk about was the announcement that Chandler Parsons is going to be out for tonight's game. And this one is an interesting thing. It was listed on the injury report as a planned rest day. So that's all well and good. I mean, you know, he's had a few of those, so that's not really unusual. But what is unusual is the timing of it, and the fact that it's coming when it is. You know, this is a stretch of time when you would think, okay, well, like, all right, now are the Grizzlies playing a whole bunch of games? Is it like coming thick and fast? You're talking about a really, you know, big stretch, and the answer is no, not really. You know, the Grizzlies are coming off of that road trip, of course, but you know, he missed two of the six games on that road trip. He played on Monday against San Antonio. He played Wednesday against Phoenix. In the normal amount of minutes, he's kind of averaging around, you know, 22, 23 minutes now with his new restriction. He'll miss tonight's game, and the Grizzlies won't play again until Monday, and they play Brooklyn. And then you have two games left before after tonight, they'll have two games left before the All-Star break. So you're talking about, you know, on the horizon, like, you know, three games left and then a whole bunch of time off for Chandler Parsons. So I wouldn't think that fatigue would have anything to do with it. I wonder if there was some kind of a reaction that he suffered, or if something wasn't quite right. I thought he looked a little bit better. He threw himself into the mix a little more actively against the Suns. 7 assists, that's a season high for Parsons. And I thought he was okay. I mean, he still doesn't look right. He hasn't looked right all year. That's not a surprise. He's not all of a sudden going to turn into, you know, fleet of foot and incredibly agile. That's not going to happen for Chandler Parsons. But I didn't think he looked unusually bad or different or anything like that. So, you know, and also these rest days that we talk about with Parsons, generally speaking, they come when he's got a back-to-back situation. That's most of the planned rest days have come on back-to-backs, either generally on the second half of the back-to-back, but sometimes on the front end of the back-to-back. We have seen that a couple of times. So you know, is that that's not really a factor here. It's not a back-to-back before or after this game. So, you know, I go back and look at his previous DNPs, and he's had now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them since coming back from the bone bruise in his other knee, not the one that's been, you know, surgically repaired a couple times, but the other knee. In those six that we're talking about, of those six, only one of them has been in a situation that wasn't a back-to-back, and that was the Toronto game in FedEx Forum. I think there was a minor injury situation there. Honestly, I don't remember. But that's the only one that isn't. The other five are all back-to-back type situations. So that is, I don't know, just it's an interesting one. It raises a little spidey sense. It's not a back-to-back, and it's, you know, in fact, there's plenty of rest on the horizon. So the fact that he's not playing, I don't know. Joining me now, Locked On Grizzlies, is a fellow member of the Locked On community. He hosts Locked On Warriors. Of course, you hear him all over Dunked On podcast, in addition to the Twitter NBA show and many, many outlets writing. He is on Twitter as well, and you know him, I am sure, in many forms and fashions. He's Danny LaRue, kind enough to give us a few minutes on this edition of the pod. Danny, I got to ask you, first of all, it's a pleasure to have you on. Enjoy all your work, and this is such an interesting matchup now, because, you know, in spite of all available evidence, in spite of everything else, the Grizzlies are 2-0 against the Warriors and have had a reasonably good record against the Warriors over the years. Do you think, is there something in the style difference, something in the way these two teams match up, that the Grizzlies have a reasonable comfort level with this thing?
A little bit. The Warriors sometimes struggle against teams that slow it down and really battle every possession. That's what Cleveland did in the 2016 finals, and it worked to reasonable effect, especially if the referees are going to let stuff go. It can certainly help in that way. And Memphis executes that to the nth degree. That's a big part of why they've been so successful. They're also very talented, but it's interesting with these two teams, because for a long time, the Warriors were snake bit by the Grizzlies, and then it turned around right around that playoff series, and then now it looks like it's going back the other direction, though there is a differentiation that can be made between that first game when Memphis absolutely smoked the Warriors and the second one where the Warriors had a big lead and then completely blew it when Memphis just was awesome at the end of that game.
Yeah, I can't. That game, Danny, is such a weird aberration. I don't even know where to begin with it. You were there. What do you recall? How did that happen? I recall missed free throws. I recall a lot of missed wide open looks from the Warriors. I recall offensive breakdowns. What did you see from your perspective?
It had a lot of the hallmarks of some other Warriors games where Kerr has a habit of keeping starters in at the beginning of the fourth quarter, even though the game looks or feels out of hand. And what happens in those moments, this is my personal theory, is that the starters are playing more not to get hurt than anything else. And that's justifiable. I mean, they play heavy minutes. That's very important for the team. And if the opponent executes well, they can get a little bit of a burst there. And what happened in that game was that the Warriors just never came back. The light switch never came back on. And so Memphis used their pretty standard late game, awesome execution. Warriors missed some shots, didn't take advantage of some opportunities. And then what happened.
It was kind of a pivot point, although the Grizzlies, I think it embodied some of the things that, you know, those of us around here have talked about with this Grizzly team. They're a bit of a strange squad. They were in November, like, kind of the prototype Grizzly top defense, one of the worst offense, that kind of thing. They got a little squirrely when Mike Conley came back from his back fracture, and the defense really kind of collapsed at that point. And it still hasn't really returned in full against some of their schedule's weird. The last few games they've played a lot of bad teams and a lot of teams that have rested guys. Kawhi was rested for the Spurs on Monday. And, you know, so it's hard to get a real gauge of where they're at defensively. But if you look over the last 6 weeks or so, I think they're like 20th, 21st, the Grizzlies in defense, and like their top 10 offensively. What have you noticed, you know, watching this team from your perspective? You watch a lot of teams around the league for Dunked On and from an overall league-wide perspective. What do you make of the Grizzlies from afar?
I've been really impressed overall with how they've been able to manage the turnover that they've been dealing with, because a lot of times when you see that sort of season that changes tenor a lot, it's due to personnel changeover, and that's certainly been true for Memphis, but they've been able to come through it relatively well. And one of the parts that's been so surprising to me is that they've been able to have some sort of, I don't think continuity is the right word, but they've been able to function offensively despite having late scratches and scheduled rest. And those are components that can really derail teams, especially when they have a young bench, which Memphis certainly does.
Yeah, you know, I think that comes from having the core group having been around for as long as they have, with Conley and Gasol and Tony Allen and Zach Randolph. There's kind of a nice centered component there. And even if those guys, one or two of those guys miss, there's still like a thing that runs through. The issue for this team, and I talked to Mike Conley a lot about it earlier this week, is like, how do you pivot from you being all defense and, you know, enough offense to get by, but certainly not, that's not your calling card, to being able to expand offensively without losing defense? I think that's where they've started to struggle a little bit. But the Warriors have similar, I mean, it's clearly not the same, but there are similar issues that have picked up here or there in incorporating Kevin Durant into the mix with that settled group as well. Where are they right now in terms of that? Where are they functionally as you watch them on a game-to-game basis?
They're still figuring it out, but they have so much talent that them figuring it out still makes them a ludicrously good team. And it's strange because I tell people, you know, I'm not sure if this is still true, but as of a couple days ago, the Warriors were first in offensive rating and first in defensive rating, and yet I still thought that they could be a lot better than they've been so far. And that comes from just being a team that has four all-stars and has a lot of support pieces that make sense. They're not super deep, but they have enough in that way. And Durant, as you kind of were alluding to, he is such a massive change from a lot of the other pieces. And at moments earlier in the season, and the Memphis game was actually a catalyst for some of this, the second Memphis game, of realizing that a big part of what needs to happen is that he needs to fit into the Warrior system a little bit more than they need to adjust to him. And that's been kicking in over the last few weeks and has made the Warriors even better offensively, because Durant has played in systems where he has to shoulder a lot of the burden himself at moments. And KD and Russ didn't do a lot. They didn't build on each other as much. And some of that was due to the scheme. Some of that was just the personnel fit was a little bit different. And my theory was always that, even back when I wrote about the possibility of Durant joining the Warriors early in last season, was that if he made that decision, it was going to be with the knowledge that he was going to have to change his game. And to a point, that has happened more recently, especially over the last month.
The thing I like about your discussion of the Warriors and Locked On Warriors and within the context of what you write is there's so much noise around the Warriors. I don't even know what it must be like on a game-to-game basis to cover with this thing about Draymond and Durant going at it, and then it's actually a ploy and a psychological trick, and he's a mastermind and this, that, and the other. Do you ignore, when you're covering the team, how much of that colors what you see, write, do, and how much of that do you just sort of push to the side because it's just getting so much play everywhere else?
I'm very much an effects-based person. So if I feel that it is making a difference in terms of the way that they play, then it matters. If it doesn't, then it doesn't. You know, a lot of what is going on is just kind of the people involved setting the personality dynamics in place, because they didn't have a ton of time to do that in the offseason. That's not really the way this works. You know, players don't hang out the whole summer together, and so they need to figure all this out a little bit on the fly. And Draymond is very much at moments about motivating players directly in person, sometimes with the lights on at their brightest. And so it's not surprising that that has been a part of it. But again, I fall back on the idea of, well, what does this mean for the team in general? And so they're actually one of the best examples that has happened the whole year was that animated conversation with Draymond and Durant at the end of the regulation in the Memphis game when Durant, it seemed like, kind of shrugged off Stephen Curry.
Right.
And that helped lead to an actual change where he, you know, they integrated more, they moved the ball more. Stephen Curry has had a fabulous month since then. And so in that case, the conversation, whether the substance of it or not, was really the cause, it mattered in that sense. And so I'll care about it at that point. And also the idea of breathlessly reporting the palace intrigue, the drama, doesn't interest me because other people are doing that and doing it well. In another system, another kind of universe, maybe that would be something I would talk about. But I can wait and see what happens and talk about it in that context.
It's funny because that's, you know, similar stuff happens, I think, to most teams. It's just when it's this Warriors team, everything is amplified to 11 and you got to go into all the details of every little thing. You know, there was a similar situation with the Grizzlies 2 or 3 weeks ago that I think went largely unnoticed nationally, where there were, you know, multiple, you know, yelling matches and Tony Allen was unhappy and Marc Gasol was yelling at Mike Conley and they were some, you know, cursing and this, that, and the other. And I just think people, you know, and you've seen this team grow and change and all of that. I think this stuff happens. And I mean, by and large, it happened, you know, a long time ago. You had Jordan punching out, you know, teammates, Steve Kerr. You had teammates getting after it. This stuff happens like all the time. And I guess, you know, in the social media stuff amplifies everything. We have to kind of get into the cycles of it. But to me, Danny, I think the what you say about an effects-based approach is the right thing to do, because in general, I know the Grizzlies, at least from David Fizdale's perspective, he said a lot, I don't care if you guys scream, yell, curse, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. That's great as long as you resolve it, as long as they're at the end of that whole thing, even if it's in public, on the bench, I don't really care, as long as you guys get done with that and you have a resolution and you have found something that you can agree upon and we can move on from here. Great. Otherwise, don't do it.
Right. That's pretty much the way that I see it. I mean, there are two different points I think that are important to make with this. One, you know, I think a lot of us, but have a background in sports at some level, youth sports more for me than anything else. And we all got in issues if we played team sports with players on our team. Sometimes it was in the locker room, sometimes it was on the field, you know, depending on what it was. And so we've dealt with that. And also, it's worth remembering that there are many times when the biggest things that affect the team and morale and chemistry are elements that are not reported. You know, if it's something yeah. weird on a personal basis, mm-hmm. can think back, you know, there are all sorts of murmurs in back rooms that you hear for years after the fact on why a team underperforms relative to expectations. And so why are we focusing on the ones that we can see when oftentimes those ones are more important, but due to the code of the locker room or many other things, they do not get discussed?
Yeah, there's stuff that we, you know, you can't report, you find out about, things like that. But I do think that, you know, teams can be too nice. You know, I think that was a problem for this Grizzlies team a few years back, the core with Rudy Gay and those kinds of, in general, they were too nice and they didn't really fight. Mike Conley has taken him a while to mature to the point where he can kind of get after his team a little bit. After the Milwaukee loss early in the season up in Milwaukee, he got into, you know, an animated discussion with teammates in the locker room, which is really unusual for him. He's very mild-mannered guy. I think you need to have a little conflict in order to move things along. That's why the Warrior situation, I think it's healthy. I think it's good. I tend to agree with that approach, that as long as you're moving forward, and this team has moved forward, that you've seen and you have chronicled the you know, the changes in the way Steph Curry's been used, the changes in the plays they run, the changes in the way that they've, you know, Kevin Durant has kind of come on board with this. So now with that in mind, the last part of the season starting, I guess, you know, for our purposes with the game tonight, but you know, it could be, you know, you pick whatever point after the All-Star break, whatever you want to say. What is the Warriors' goal within the regular season leading up to the playoffs? What do they want to accomplish in that stretch of games?
It's the same basic goal they've had all year. Stay healthy and figure out what they have in every component. So what lineups work, what lineups don't work, what players fit well with the four All-Stars. So if that's Zaza Pachulia, like they've been starting, Andre Iguodala, which has been the most common death lineup, if that term still applies, and figuring out all those sorts of things. JaVale McGee will, if he's healthy enough to play, he's probable right now for the game on Friday, you know, how he fits with the starters and how they want to make all of this work, because the Warriors are in a strange, distinct situation because teams often try to say, oh, it's about the playoffs, it's about the ring. And that's really a matter of perspective, and teams and individuals can define that for themselves. However, the Warriors actually experienced it because they had the best regular season in NBA history. They went 73-9. They did not win the championship. And a lot of the players, at least from their public pronouncements, and there's no reason for them to lie, feel like the season was a disappointment. So if that's the way you feel, then you put your money where your mouth is and you make sure the regular season doesn't matter that much. So we'll see how they approach it. But a really fascinating indicator of that is the idea that Kerr is basically holding back on Zaza Pachulia and David West, not so much because they're that they're in some sort of like bad situation, but just because they can be patient, and why not?
You know, and there are those that say you want to hold out on some of your matchups and showing your cards until you get to the postseason. I want to know, I think Grizzly fans, there's this talk a lot about the fact that they're 2-0, and let's say the Grizzlies win tomorrow night. Let's say that they go 3-0 against the Warriors. Does that prove anything with regard to the postseason? Is Memphis a then more dangerous or more troublesome, or does the season series, whether it's the Grizzlies or anybody else, with regard to the Warriors, show anything about matchups, or are the matchups and the real things strategically that are going to be done held off until the postseason?
I don't think it makes a big impact unless you see it in the players themselves. Again, going back to the effects-based thing. But Memphis is actually a great example of this because they had beaten the Warriors a lot and pretty soundly before that playoff series. And then they did well at the beginning of the playoff series, ended up forcing that kind of like team dinner to figure things out, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Warriors won that series and came back strong and did well. And the benefit of having a really, really strong team is that a lot of those things end up not really mattering because mental blocks only really can be a difference maker. In that point, you very rarely see an NBA team in a playoff series lose because the other team has their number. It's just not the way it works in a 7-game series. So I don't put too much stock in it, but the underlying factors, like we talked about at the very beginning, about how Memphis can slow the game down, how they have really good personnel against the Warriors with individual defenders, that those underlying factors can become relevant.
I was going to say, when you brought that up, it was interesting because I was thinking about the playoff series. You know, that was the Mike Conley broken face, and
right,
that has taken on legendary status around these parts. And you know, but that was, they were down 2-1. They have the team dinner. It was, by all admission, like their, you know, come to Jesus moment. Let's figure this thing out. This could be really bad. But I go back because Kevin Durant now is involved, and he had the same thing where he had the Mr. Unreliable headline. I don't know if you remember from back in the series with the Grizzlies 3 years ago when he and Westbrook combined, I think, were shooting 25% in the first 5 games of the series, and Durant had been completely stymied, mostly by Tony Allen, and they looked very likely to lose, and they pulled out game 6 and 7 thanks to a controversial Zebo ejection and then suspension for game 7. But that was another kind of moment. And it strikes me that Memphis is kind of that gatekeeper team. I think they bristle at that a little bit, understandably so, that they're the team that's kind of the very good opponent, the very tough opponent that's going to put you through your paces, but they've always just been a little too limited to actually win that. But it strikes me that I think that's been the case for pretty much everyone on that side of the ball for the Warriors that has gone through a series with Memphis.
They have, and they also had that series where they knocked off the Spurs. I mean, that, I believe that was a 7-2, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So they went through that as well. And Memphis, you know, the part of the reason why, unless Chandler Parsons can be way healthier than he has been so far, why they kind of fit that role is that to win a championship, broadly speaking, you have to win 4 series against very good teams. And it's hard to do that if your personnel just isn't at that high level. I mean, I trot out the stat that I believe there have only been like 4 NBA champions in the last 25 years that did not have a player who had already won an MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And yep, it's just hard, you know, like winning a championship in that way. is difficult. The Pistons are basically the only team that has done it. I believe there have been one or two others, but pretty much just the Pistons. And that makes a lot of those other teams gatekeepers. And sometimes it's just a part of the process. But Memphis has the personnel to be a little bit better than that. And the point with that always is that it's not that far, if you can get to the conference finals, let's say,
yep,
to just get a couple of good bounces and make it all the way in. Memphis has gotten pretty close a fair number of times, and you never know what's going to happen in the East in particular. So I'm excited for Memphis basically in almost every playoff series. I think that they are a way of shining a light on every other team. And also, this is the first year in a little while where I want to see what they're made of, what's different. They have a new coach. Their offense has looked much better this year. And so it's weird to think about the playoffs in early February, but that's, I guess, what happens when you live in the Bay Area and cover the Warriors a lot, is that you see things from that lens, and Memphis is certainly in that picture.
Well, and I think in the West this year, Danny, I mean, if you're one of the top seven, there's no question you're going to make the playoffs. It's just a matter of positioning. I mean, you pretty much know the structure of this thing. The only intrigue is between spots 4 through 7.
Well, that's a question I was going to ask you, just as somebody who follows Memphis closely. If you were looking at this from their perspective, who in the West, let's exclude the Warriors just because that's, if we're talking 4 through 7, that doesn't involve the one seed.
Right.
Who would you want to see and who would you not want to see?
It's interesting because I just posed this question to the pod listeners this week. Well, the Jazz are, there's sort of a split opinion on the Jazz. I happen to think the Grizzlies would be happy with the Jazz matchup at 4-5, ideally at 4, obviously. But the Jazz are 19-4 this year when both Gordon Hayward and George Hill play, but two of those four losses are to the Grizzlies, and there is a certain matchup comfort. The style of play that Utah can use to stymie some opponents doesn't really stymie the Grizzlies. They've had a remarkable amount of success against Gobert this year, even with Zach Randolph, who you wouldn't think would be a great matchup, but he's done really well against Gobert, and Gobert hasn't really hurt them on the offensive side enough to be a problem. Gordon Hayward has just been okay in those matchups. George Hill has been pretty well neutralized in a way that I was surprised by. Mike Conley, what I was going to say, Danny, that Mike Conley's part of the problem for him, and I'm writing about this. I think he would have been an all-star this year had he not come back from his back injury too soon. There's about a 3 or 4 week stretch where he really struggled defensively. He didn't have any kind of movement. If you go and watch, he just didn't finish the same way. He's been healthy for the last 4 to 6 weeks, and his numbers have been great. They were great for the first 4 weeks. They've been great the last 4 weeks. It's just that little sandwiched part in the middle. He's played really well in that matchup. So I think the Jazz, to me, would be ideal for the Grizzlies. I don't think the Rockets are a great matchup for them because of the elements of spread, pick, and roll that really just test a still nascent Grizzly defensive group. Some of the groupings they put out there are not great in terms of the connection when they are asked to go through rotations and when they're put through switches the way that David Fizdale wants them to. It has been a little inconsistent, and that's led to some serious problems against guys that can do what, I mean, there's very few that can do what James Harden can do, but he was absolutely picking the Grizzlies apart in their last matchup. So I think over the course of a series, that would be troublesome. There are a lot of people around here who would be okay with the Spurs matchup. I'm not one of them, but there are a lot of people who feel like that would be a pretty comfortable matchup for the Grizzlies, with the exception of Kawhi and his capability, what he can do. But they feel like the Grizzlies do well against Aldridge, slow him down, and no issue with Powell with this group. And I don't necessarily concur with that, but I think in terms of order, I think they probably, to me, it would go Jazz, Spurs, Rockets, if you in terms of preference. But I think that's probably the way it would go. And Clippers, I'm sick of seeing that matchup, honestly, Danny. We've seen that so many times, so I think everyone's sick of it.
That's totally fair. I will note that I had Conley on my All-Star team anyway. I think that it was, I understand why he didn't make it, just because of the way that the voters vote and the right.
Yeah.
I always have a difference of opinion. That's just
he's a
the
tricky
way it
one.
Is.
He's a tricky one sometimes to characterize because of I mean, he's such an unassuming guy and such an unassuming figure, and he used to be a big steals guy, you know, and he's really dialed that back in favor of a little more settled conservative approach. He's not
well, he's also not as obviously great. Like, those players always do well in the All-Star game. Like, right. Kyrie Irving is going to do well in fan voting. He's going to do well in other voting because he makes spectacular plays. I, you know, they're obviously not in the same conference, but I would say Conley has had a better year than Kyrie had, at least when I was doing my rosters.
Yeah.
And so you have to deal with that, and the West is super deep at point guard. So
they're
deserving guys that don't make it. I mean, I'm going to be disappointed if Conley ends up being the best player in NBA history, doesn't make an All-Star team. It shouldn't be that way. But in terms of the Rockets and all of those other matchups, like, I don't know. If it's interesting that Tony Allen, from what I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't done that great a job on Harden in the past, but they're so dependent on one guy. I feel like, and as much as D'Antoni's system is wonderful, I feel like Memphis might be able to crack that nut, but it's not certain.
Well, okay, this is where that matchup thing comes in, because, like, Zach Randolph, I think, needs to play a decent role for them to really be successful, and then that bench scoring to come in, because the bench can be a little iffy if he's not playing and he's not giving you those minutes. But you can't play him in those matchups because guys like Ryan Anderson, I mean, we saw it even last week with the game against the Thunder in Oklahoma City. Joffrey LaVerne absolutely roasted him. I mean, it was a terrible matchup. When LaVerne was out there with Zach Randolph, I think he ended up with 16-10 points rebounds-wise, but he was a minus 19 because he was just getting killed defensively every time. So the issue with the Rockets is they're just going to, I think, murder that matchup and be brutal, which means he's not going to be able to play. And I think that's going to be a real strain on the rest of the Grizzlies offense. So I don't know that the Jazz can do that. I think the Spurs could, in theory. I just don't think it's quite as clear that they could do that, but I think the Rockets absolutely could. I think the Thunder absolutely could. I think the Warriors have every chance to do that as well, and did, in fact, actually in that fourth quarter. There was just a lot of missed shots in that fourth quarter, mm-hmm. But I recall Kevin Durant having many wide-open looks because of that very matchup. They kept Zebo out there the entire fourth quarter, and it was kind of walking on a tightrope. That's what it's going to be for the Grizzlies. That's why it's really matchup-dependent for them, Danny, but if they can, you know, if they can find the right group, I think this is a better team. You know, they showed the other night they can make, I mean, the stat that blows my mind is they've made double-digit threes in like 18 of their last 24 games, which if you go back in their last seven seasons, they made, I think, 23 games of 10 or more threes. Mm-hmm. And they've done it in 18 of the last 24. I mean, they're a completely different group with regard to how they take the threes.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they can do in the playoffs. And as you said, it's more a matter of who they face than if they're going to make it in. Yeah,
that's exactly right. So tonight, do you expect win-loss? Does it? I don't know that it's going to change the trajectory of anything, but do you think the Warriors come out full strength, or they're going to be late scratches?
I don't think they're going to be late scratches. The only one would really be JaVale. But I think that the Warriors will, I think they'll play well. And they don't like losing to the same team twice. And they really don't like losing to the same team three times. So it could be a possibility. But you always run the risk with a team like this that I can understand why they would be looking for the next day when the Warriors face the Thunder in the Durant return game. And
yeah,
maybe they don't lose, but maybe it's closer than expected. And both these teams are so talented that it wouldn't surprise me at all if Memphis won.
Thanks so much for joining me here on Locked On Grizzlies. As always, you can check me out 7 to 10, Wolo and Peter in the morning, Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 87.7 FM. Check out Numbers Game in the commercial appeal. And you can check us out on Facebook as well. Search for Locked On Grizzlies or go to facebook.com/lockedongrizzlies. For those of you, of course, that are big fans of the podcast, let me tell you something. This is a great spot for your company. If you want to reach men between the ages of 18 and 54, this is the place for your audiences. And here's something to consider. Recent surveys have shown that podcast listeners are 65% more willing to think seriously about purchasing products they learned about from podcasts. 60%, given equal price and quality, prefer to purchase from companies that advertise on their favorite podcasts. Our rates are very reasonable. Please shoot me an email, peter@peteredmiston.com. Shoot me a tweet @peteredmiston or a direct message, something like that. We can get all the information out to you. I'd love to have you on the podcast, become part of our family, and reach all those great folks out there that are listening. Thank you so much. You have been Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily podcast on the Memphis Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Napa
know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.